Hey, it's Lydia. Before we jump in, I want to give a little bit of context to the story. In the last year, the thing which has given me the biggest headache and the thing which keeps coming up in my mind is about housing. It's actually the thing that me and my husband argue about, and we really don't argue, but this is a sticking topic. Do we buy a house or do we rent? I've always come from the place that it's a very emotion-led decision, I think, for me. And I think the idea of a home and a place that you can make your own that's like safe and it's nurturing and it's consistent. And to me, I've really idealized that in my mind. And also growing up in the UK, I think we all do that. Like the idea of owning a home is a massive achievement and it's something to celebrate, don't get me wrong, but it's been made to be this epitome of being an adult, and that if you're still living at home or you haven't bought yet, you haven't reached that milestone. But with our economy, it is just really difficult. I definitely thought I'd own my own house by 32. I thought I'd have this perfectly decorated and beautiful interior designed home. But in reality, we're still renting and we're surrounded by IKEA furniture and we're not allowed to paint our bedroom walls. It's a challenge. Whereas for my husband, it's much more of a financial decision. And I really do get that because at the moment, the average mortgage in the UK is 5.2%. So it is obviously a massive financial undertaking and it needs to make sense, right? The thing is with all of this is that it's about choices. Do you choose to invest a large amount of money in a home or do you choose to do something else with your money? And that's actually what this episode is about. So maybe you're wondering, well, why on earth are you talking about property? Because this is about property, but it's also about choices. And the reason is that today we're talking to Tanya Baker and she owns her own real estate agency. Tanya is in her early 30s and she's built this amazing company. But what's weird is I've been following her on social media for such a long time. I would have presumed being an estate agent, she'd own her own property. And she posted a story where she talked about how she had decided to take the money that she saved for a house deposit and invest it into starting her own estate agency. And to me, this felt like such a big and brave move. I think a lot of us probably have in the back of our head this big dream that we'd like to do or this business that we'd like to set up. But taking that financial risk or that financial roll of the dice is really scary. But it's exactly what Tanya did. So you're going to hear a lot about housing. We are going to talk about the reality of housing for our generation. We're going to talk about the emotional connection of it. And we're going to talk about how difficult it is. But we're also going to talk about backing yourself and knowing when a vision is worth putting the finances into and really rolling that dice on something that you think could be a different future for you. Tanya is so fun and you've probably seen her on social media. She has this iconic red hair, which always has the most perfect bouncy blow dryer you've ever seen in your life. So if you're listening to this on audio, I very much recommend going over to her Instagram. She's an amazing guest. She's incredibly wise and she brings a lot of empathy and understanding to the process of buying a house. If you're surrounded by people who are buying property and maybe you're thinking about it, maybe you're not, maybe you're actually loving the flexibility of renting, but this is an interesting conversation because whilst it is about property, it's actually about betting on yourself and taking a risk on something that you're passionate about. I think you're going to enjoy it. So let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Well, Tanya, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited to have you because obviously I've been following your amazing business glow up of like the last, 3 years, I think I've been following you.
Yeah, 2 or 3 years, I think it was. That was when I met you and Chris, wasn't it?
Yeah. So for the listeners, we met because I was looking at a house to rent and Tanya showed us around and immediately I was like, I think I came out and I said to Chris, I was like, I'm obsessed with her. Like, I've never met an estate agent who's actually, well, firstly, who knows what's going on in the property. Usually you ask a question and it's like, oh, I don't know, I'll ask someone. But also someone who's just like very open and fun and like good vibes.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah, immediately I was like, I'm going to follow her Instagram. I'm going to follow everything. And oh my God, has it blown up in the last few years?
Yeah, it's crazy. So I think when you were just saying off air, that when you met me, I had like 2,000 followers in February 2023. And then now it's 124,000 people. It's a lot of people.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And also kind of unheard of, which I'm sure we'll go into, but I don't think any estate agents have big followings like that.
There's a few out there. There's a couple. I think a lot of them are male. So it's nice to be like a lady in the industry that's sort of changing things and leading or like setting an example. It's nice. It's really rewarding. And like, yeah, I can't believe this is my life sometimes. I'm like, oh my God, this is my life. This is who I am. Yeah.
That's awesome. When I look at you, I'm like, wow, I don't see you. You're not like the typical estate agent that everyone has in their head who's a little bit grumpy, a little bit, you know, pissed off about things.
Yeah. I think that the generalization or the kind of like stereotypical estate agent is someone that drives a really flashy car, wants to earn loads of money, just wants to get deals done. And I think ultimately we're all here to work and we're all here to earn a living. But I think all the while you care about that before your purpose, the things you actually really care about. If you're chasing money, you end up putting people behind you. Like, it's the wrong way around. I think, you know, most people, they can sense when someone just wants to get a deal done, and they can sense when they're focused on the commission. In the industry, we call it commission breath. This is a bad one.
Commission
breath. Like, you can tell when someone wants to get a deal done. Like, it's like clear because you can just smell it. Like,
that's so funny.
Yeah. So I heard that years ago and I thought that's so true. But I think, yeah, the reason I think the feeling is different is because where I left my corporate role, there's no pressure on targets, no pressure on volume. And, you know, I don't have a financial pressure above my head. And I try to make sure that that's always the same, always financially ahead, which is nice. So there's no pressure. And we ultimately, the goal is always to help the client. So if we're focusing on the client getting their goal, which is moving home or selling their home, then we will get paid at the end of that. So there's no point in us putting the getting paid first. But yeah, I think that's the problem. Most people that work in the industry do focus on getting paid, and then therefore they just don't focus on what you want or what's important to you. And actually, as a result, if it's the buyer, or, you know, the buyer is the person that has the money, the seller is the person that's selling their property, and they're our client often. But without the buyer, you can't sell the property. So you have to treat both people with a huge amount of respect. The seller's got their most expensive asset and they're putting it in your hands and they're trusting you. And the buyer is, you know, they're making a big step in their lives and they're going up in the world. They're getting a promotion, they're earning more money, and they want to put it into a property, or they're moving home because their family's grown, they're having a baby. You're championing those people. So that is the forefront of the focus all the time. It's like, these people need our help. We're here to help them. And yes, we get paid to do what we do, but actually that's not the forefront of our focus. So I think that's why it doesn't feel.
Yeah.
I think it's warmer because it feels like you've got someone that's actually trying to help you.
It feels human.
Yeah.
I definitely felt that. And, you know, I always like to dig into, like, get under the hood of, like, why people have gone for the routes that they've gone down or how they've ended up where they've ended up. And there's this quote that I really love, and I'm going to actually recite it so I get it correctly. Yeah, there's this quote that I really love. It's from the founder of Mind Valley, which is like a meditation movement. And he said, if you want to find out what someone's true purpose is, ask them what they felt injustice around when they were a child. So is there like a reason why property was so interesting to you?
No. So I didn't really mean to become an estate agent. It was kind of an accident. I was in retail before and it sort of just happened. And I didn't take it seriously as a career until a good few years in. But I'm a bit of a people pleaser and I love helping people. And I'm very sociable. When I was growing up, my mum would always be that lady that would have a chat. If we were in a queue of long people, she'd be having a chat with the person behind her. She was just that social butterfly of a human. And she kind of always raised me to, like, be kind to others, be polite, be nice. You never know. She's always said, you know, you never know what someone else is going through. And I think as an estate agent, that's our whole, like, that's again something you have to have at the forefront of your focus. You never know what someone is going through. People do get very stressed and they get very, you know, frustrated about the process, because it is a frustrating process. Even in the UK, it's so antiquated compared to other countries. But I think the reason, like, going back to your question, I think that ties in from my mum raising me and being like, you never know what someone's going through. So when people are impatient and unkind to others, it feels like, actually, what else is going on behind the scenes? And it almost feels like we're like therapists in that way, to be there by our clients, now by our side the whole way through, and to make sure that they feel supported. And actually, there's loads of times you look at it, like you're saying about the other estate agents, people don't feel supported. And actually, that really frustrates me. So I feel like growing up and seeing people not treated with respect, I used to hate that when I was little, or not being kind to others, like bullies and stuff. That was like a big no-no. And as you get, and actually I've dealt with a few estate agents that we've been in chains with, and they throw their weight around and they get really frustrated and they talk to like our client who's selling with us and maybe buying with them, they talk to them really rubbish. I think so unfair. I get so frustrated and I have to rein myself in. I'm like, I can't call these people up and complain about how they're being, because we're going to probably work with them again in the future. But how are you in this industry? Like, that is big. That injustice really frustrates me. The fact that there are people out there that do treat people like just another number drives me mad.
And also, I mean, I'd never even thought about that with property, is that, as you said, like, inevitably you'll be there at really lovely moments of people's lives when they're like moving in together, or they're having another baby or a first baby and things, but you must also be there in like difficult situations, right? Like,
yeah,
grandparents passed away and you're selling the house, or like,
yeah,
it's a lot.
Yeah, we had one recently which was really sad. We had a lady that was selling her mum's home, and her mum died of cancer, and it was really sad, and that was really awful. Like, bless her, it was on the road that I grew up on, so I knew the road and knew the area really well. And she had moved in, oh gosh, it was like 65 years ago she bought it. Wow. It was a long time ago. And she was lovely, and I'd go around there and I'd talk to her, and then to hear she'd passed was really, really sad. But to be there for her daughter, who had power of attorney and was looking after the home, it felt really rewarding to make sure that she was well cared for. And some, like, I sort of took a, you know, you feel like you're looking after someone, you've got responsibility to look after them. So sometimes it is sad, you know, you get divorce, you get death, you get people that are moving for work, and one of them is, you know, it might be really good that someone's got a promotion, but the others, like, maybe it's husband's got a promotion, has to go overseas, and wife is thinking, actually, like, got to uproot the children from school, and we're leaving all our family members. So it's a delicate balance, and often it's not. There's, I think, how you word things and the way you approach a situation is always really important. So I'll always refer to it as, in a sad situation, it's like closing of a chapter. So it's, you know, that's been a really big chapter in their lives. And if it's, if someone's passed away, you're closing that chapter and you're helping them do that, rather than it being a sale, a transaction, you know, calling a client a vendor. I hate the word vendor. It's so transactional. It's a horrible word. It sounds like they own a shop with like a roller door at the front.
A vending machine.
Yes, yeah, it's like a machine. Yeah, it's horrible. So it can be really sad, and it can be quite. But I think there's also a little bit of like a small piece of not joy, but like that feeling inside where you feel like, actually, I've really taken care of these people, and had they gone with someone else, maybe they wouldn't have been taken care of.
Yeah. And also, I can imagine, like, in the stress of doing things like power of attorney, it would be really easy for someone to freak out and be like, I just want to get rid of this house, or like, you know, massively drop the price. And those kind of things can really impact people in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're the way that I view what we do is we're not salespeople at all. We're advisors, and we're here to give people the advice they need to make their plans happen. So often it's not, oh, you know, what house have you got to sell? It's, you know, what are you looking to do? Are you looking to stay local? What are your plans? What's next for you after this? And if they sometimes, you know, we'll say, oh, when are you looking to move? Because actually the timescale is really important, because this actually, we're thinking, because of timescales, it's January next year. We're like, okay, well, that, if we were in the high street, we'd say, list your home now, we'll make your buyer wait, because we were working towards targets. But actually, the way that we work is actually, no, it's probably best that you wait a little while and maybe have your photos taken in the summer, but launch around September, because the time frame could work for that. But it's always an advice-driven process and guidance, making sure that people feel like they have all the information they need. And sometimes that means that they don't sell at all. You know, we've had people that actually it doesn't make financial sense for them to sell because they've got a large mortgage redemption, or, you know, maybe it's better to do it later at a later date. But that conversation is better had sooner rather than later. And sometimes it's conversations around price, because other agents have gone in and said, oh, it's worth £1.5 million. And I look at it and I'm like, I can't see more than £1.25 million worth of property here. How have you got that figure?
Yeah.
And having a frank conversation like that with someone on the sofa is uncomfortable, but you'd rather have it there and then and potentially lose the business than take them on and overpromise, and then further down the line, they're upset because you haven't sold their property for too much money.
And we've learned that on Selling Sunset.
Oh, exactly.
What a classic mistake. Mm. Overpricing and then you can't sell it.
Yeah. So. We talk about it all the time in the office. We get really frustrated because, like, what is the point? Because you've overpromised this client, you've sold them a dream, you know, they've heard this price, and you've the agent's probably said, yeah, we can get this for you. And then they're sat on the market for months and months and months and months. And it doesn't, if again, it goes back to the client's goal. If they were thinking they'd move by September for their children's schools, and that price, that property went on for way too high and they can't sell, let's just push their goal back by months. You've wasted so much time of theirs by over-promising. It drives me. That is like injustice, but it's annoying because there's no regulation in the industry.
Right.
So, and a lot of it is based on, again, the targets and the volume that the agents have got to go out and win the business for their big corporate company. So they'll tell clients what they want to hear. And I'm like, could you just be honest? Like, we need more honesty in the industry.
Yeah. On the idea of people like looking for what, you know, being open on what they want. One of my favorite things on your Instagram is like the classic, "Hey Tanya, I'm looking for," and I feel like anyone who, they're probably recognizing your voice, to be fair, listening to this podcast, because all of your reels where you're doing like, "Hey Tanya, I'm looking for," and people explain what they want. That's like a very unique Tanya content.
Yeah, that came out, so a lot of those are not, they're not actual requests that come through. They tie in really well for the video, and it's, I've learned that actually people are fascinated online about what you can get for X amount of money. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, anything, you know, "Oh, we paid this for that and this is what we got." I'm like, "Oh, what did you get?" Even if it's like a yield of cakes, I'm like, "Oh, how much does that, all that, how much all those cakes, or how much did it cost to get your nails done?" Whatever it is. And then I think that's the thing, is that people are very interested in how people spend their money. So actually, I did get, the first one was a genuine request. It was someone said, "Oh, can you show more affordable homes?" And that reel did really well. So I thought, actually, I'll do this a little bit more. And it was original. So it wasn't like I was taking someone else's sort of style, and it just came out of nowhere. It sort of grew organically. Mm. And then I thought, actually, it works really well and people like it. They like to see what they can get for their money. But then it also, people that are actively looking to buy, or if their friend is looking, I think, actually, Susan was looking to spend £2.5 million. I'll send that to her. Mm. And that works really well. But it's all about making it calm and like chilled out and relaxing, because so much content nowadays is really in your face, very loud. Mm. It's aggressively salesy. Yes. And I think this is a time in people's lives where they don't want to be aggressively sold to. It's like, actually, you should be able to watch a video of a house without someone jumping out of a cupboard and telling you you should give all your money over right here, right now. It should be relaxing.
Yeah.
So I love that side of it. I love the videos and everything. I really enjoy that.
Yeah, your content is great. And it's actually what, like, we've obviously chatted back and forth on Instagram for such a long time. And it was, you posted something, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, about how you've just bought your first home.
Yeah.
And you talked about how you'd previously saved a deposit, but you didn't decide to spend it on a house.
Yeah. So it was 4 years ago. I was in my corporate role and I was really upset. I was having a really tough time, because when you work in the corporate world, I'm sure you know this, it's like computer says no, you do a great job, but maybe not everyone around you does a great job. And you reach this like barrier where they're like, "No, you can't do that." And you're thinking, "Why? I want to better things." And they're like, "No, we can't change that. It's always been that way. We're never going to change it." So it's really frustrating. And I used to go above and beyond. And the answer to my stress was like, "Well, turn your phone off at 6. And I used to think that wasn't solving anything. Anyway, I basically, it was the February, so it was nearly 4 years ago. It was just gone 4 years ago. And I was like, "You know what, I need to just go out and do this on my own," because I was getting referrals that were coming to my mobile phone as opposed to the landline. So I thought, this is them coming to Tanya, not to the company. This is a personal recommendation. And it was really rewarding. And I remember feeling really proud of myself that this group of Pilates mums had all shared my contact details. I was like, "Oh, this is wonderful." And I thought, I can go and do this on my own. I'm sure I can. I'm unhappy. I should go and do this. And my dad, who owns his own business, was like, "I think it's a really bad idea. I think
really?"
Yeah. My dad was like, "I think you should stay in your corporate role. And I think, because you get a car allowance, you get health insurance, you know." And the funniest thing is, when I was there, because I was 2 and a bit years in, I think, I was like, "Do you know what? When I hit 5 years, I'll get a hamper. Like, I'll stay here."
Oh,
a hamper. £100 Fortnum Mason hamper.
Yeah, what was that in this hamper?
That was the motivation.
Cheese.
Moldy cheese, blue cheese. And I just remember thinking, "Oh, that's really rewarding. I'll get rewarded when I stay long." So, you know, I do kind of want to stay. And it's not, and I liked the people I worked with. I enjoyed the office. I was close to home. It was really nice. Anyway, I was like, "No, I'm so unhappy. I've got to leave." And it got to like summertime, and they changed my pay around, and all that kind of thing happened. And I was like, "No, this is it. I'm done." And I was at the time, it was 2021, and it was that boom of the market. Everyone around me that was my age was either moving house or buying a first home. Mm-hmm. And everyone was getting gifted deposits from their parents. And I'd saved some money. Like, and I remember like going to my mum and dad and being like, "Will you help me get on the ladder?" And they were like, "No, not at this time. Like, we can't." Like, and I remember being really upset about it and thinking, everyone else around me is buying their first home and I feel like a failure. And I was late 20s at the time. So it was 4 years ago. So I was 28. And I remember thinking, I'm not going to be able to start a family. Like, I can't. I know it's silly things. Like, I'd turn up to someone's house and I'd be like, that's a lovely sofa. I'd Google the sofa and it was like a £5,000 sofa. And I remember thinking, how do normal people afford a sofa? Like, how does that happen? I thought, I'm never going to be able to do the things I want to do, one, and feel like, one, do the things I want to do and feel happy doing them, like live with purpose.
Yeah.
And two, afford a sofa. So I need to go out on my own. And I decided, like, I had the house deposit and I was just like, do you know what? I'm going to gamble on myself. I'm going to take this jump, take this leap. And if it doesn't work, I can go back to the corporate world and be like, hey, I tried this. It didn't work out. Will you have me back? You know, and I always thought that would look quite honourable. You know, actually, I've taken the plunge I've taken the initiative to try and set up a business. It wasn't for me. I prefer the corporate world. And luckily enough, I've never had to look back. But I delayed that kind of gratification. Like, I put the thing that I thought I wanted most, which was a house at the time, I put that on the back burner and thought, actually, no, I just want to live with purpose. I really want to enjoy my life and I want to help people and I want to feel good about it.
Yeah.
I don't just want to, because I probably could, I mean, now at this point, I think had I stayed in a corporate role, I'd be earning more than what I earn now, but then I wouldn't be happy about it and I wouldn't be able to do the things I want to do and I wouldn't be able to say no to the business that doesn't feel right for us, you know, because it has to be a good fit. You know, we don't want people that say, oh, I want the cheapest fee and I want you to put it on for a higher price and I want you there every day of the week. You know, it's not like we've got a life too, you know, there's a balance. And I'm really glad that I did that. And I think owning a house is not everything. The reality is that our mortgage is now double what we paid in rent. Nearly.
Wow.
Yeah, nearly double. So we were paying £1,600 a month for our house we were in. And it was really cheap because we were renting from like a farm. They own loads of properties. They're just a big, massive landlord. And then our mortgage is like nearly £3,000 a month. Mm. So that's a reality. Like, people look and they think, oh, you know, you're buying a home. But actually, it's expensive. Yes, you're on the ladder and you have to take that plunge. But actually, renting helped us get by for the past 5 years and for me to set my business up. So, and I think owning a home is a really, really like big milestone. It's a special time, you know, in your life. But actually, if you've got other priorities, like some people can't afford to because they've got children and that's what they wanted the most, or they're focusing on their career. I don't know if it was a career, if it was my own job, I don't know, my business. I felt like that was the right thing to do at the time, like to put that on the back burner. And I don't regret it at all. It was a bit of a delay, but we got there in the end.
I mean, it's really ballsy because if people are, you're already seeing, like, there's so much comparison there, isn't there? Because you're seeing people who are making that decision and it's like, you could have just done that and got the flat or the house at that point. But to take a gamble and go after yourself. I mean, I was looking at property because I feel like everyone feels behind in buying property no matter how old you are. Like, when you said you feel behind at 28, I'm like, God, I still don't own a home and I'm nearly 33. And I was looking into it and actually, like, for the UK, it's super interesting. Like, in the 70s, the average age of owning a house was 24 in the UK. And now it's 34. So between 2022 and 2023, this is YouGov data, it's gone up. The average age to own a home in the UK is 34 years old. But I feel like we have this weird relationship with, I think the UK is obsessed with home ownership.
Yeah, I think it's a big goal that a lot of people work towards. And I think the thing is, you have to look at, like, there are more people renting than there are people owning. Like, years ago, I remember, you know, speaking to people that sort of 10 years ago, because I've been in the industry for 10 years, I would speak to people that had £1 million home that they'd bought in an area that wasn't that, like, it had come up massively, been gentrified. It was like a postman that had just worked hard his whole life and his wife worked in Sainsbury's. That doesn't happen anymore. And it's such a shame. I think that it's really hard to get on the ladder because of the prices that property prices have gone up crazily.
Yeah.
And then wages haven't gone up in line with that. And it's such a shame. And, like, for me as an employer, it's really important that people get paid really well. So actually, I think we're all in this together. We all win together and that's the way it should be. People should get paid well for what they do. And it's a shame, really, because it's like, I left my corporate role because they changed my pay. Would I still be there if they kept my pay or they kept me happy? I don't know. But that's the thing, isn't it? I think corporate companies and bigger companies should have more of an obligation to pay people what they're, like, it's hard. Like, property prices do feel like they've kind of gone out of control a little bit. But it's like, it's really hard. Where does it end? And it's also really hard because I went through this whole like moral dilemma years ago. It was about 2 years ago when everything started taking off for me on social media, and TikTok is a really dark place to be as a creator, because people are not as kind, especially as an estate agent. Mm. They're very frustrated about property prices, understandably.
Yeah.
I mean, most people can't afford to buy a house in the areas they grew up in now, because it just becomes so expensive. Mm. I'm one of those people. I couldn't afford to live where I used to live. But then it's like my great-great-granddad from hundreds of years ago, I could never have afforded. He lived in Blackheath. He had a massive house. I could never afford to live in Blackheath now.
Yeah.
I think it's just, I think our job as agents is to be mindful of that. Mm. I think we also work at very different ends of the industry. Like a lot of the people in the areas that we're working in, they are high-flying corporate individuals. We see some really young people buying millions, you know, late 20s, and they're buying their first home, like £1 million. Mm. We see some people that have been gifted big sums from their parents, and they're 23, like buying £1 million home as their first home. So, it's our job to champion that. But at the same time, I step back and I'm like, it's a crazy world out there. Mm. And there are people out there that can't even afford to get on the ladder. It's really sad.
And even like psychologically, I think I also looked at, like, obviously there's this big trend of people moving back in with parents. And I think for the UK, I'm not sure exactly the age group it was. Yeah, there's also this big trend of people moving back in with parents. And I was looking at the data around this, and of people aged 20 to 34, it was 15% of women live with their parents, whether they've moved back or whether they, you know, they didn't leave, and 23% of men. And you have to think, like, in that age group, when you're dating and you're finding your career and, like, you're coming into being an adult, to be financially, like, beholden to the market of property, it's psychologically, I think, interesting, and also in many ways, like, I wonder if it stunts us in that, you know, Chris and I, for example, I think we probably would have had kids earlier if we weren't looking at the reality of, you know, we live in a two bed and he has to have a studio and then we have a kid, and suddenly you're looking at like a four bed house and you're like, God, well, I'm going to have to move. I don't even know. I'm definitely not going to be in East London where I know everyone.
Yeah, it's. I feel like I look at it and I feel like it's a really vicious cycle, because you want to expand as a family, so you have to get a bigger house, which costs you more money, which means you've got to spend more time at work, which means you don't have time for your family. Mm. And actually, it's really interesting working in an area of the market where a lot of people have nannies. So we see a lot of people that have nannies, and we see a lot of people that just, they leverage out a lot of their life. So they've got the nanny, they've got the cleaners, got dog walkers, they've got everything, and actually it means that they can go and work in their high-flying corporate roles, and they maybe just don't see their family as much. So I think people, like, and that's a choice that people make, and that's what's right for them. And I think that I was living with my parents until 5 years ago, I was 27 when I moved out with my boyfriend. We thought we could live with them while we saved up for the house. And that was challenging. So we had to move out. And I think what we used to see years ago is you'd see like multi-generational families. So you'd see like grandparents and then you'd see the parents, and then the children would come along and everyone would be looking after, you know, and that's really lovely. You just don't see that anymore. People can't afford to do that because they've got to go to work. And it's really weird. This goes off on a little bit of a tangent, but I was thinking about how crazy like society is. It's nothing to do with this torch that I'm going off. But like, you know, feel like everything is convenience. Like everything is so convenient for you to just be able to get on with your job and do your job. And actually sometimes you have to step back and be like, I'm going to work. And this is like part of my thinking why I left my corporate role, because I could have kept going up and earning more money, but I would 100% imagine unhappier as I got further up. But like, what do you want? As in, I have to sit down with myself and have a conversation with myself. And I don't know if anyone else does this, but I have loads of conversations with myself in my head. I've got like two different people on my shoulder. I'm like, I'm going to work. I've set this business up. And I went from working like 9 till 6 to working like 7 a.m. until like 11 p.m. and loving it, but burning out, because you can love it, but you can still burn out. Like the thing that you love can also be very bad for you. And that like was really unhealthy. So I had to sit and go, What am I doing this for? You know, I actually thought that I'd do this and I'd have more free time for my boyfriend. And I think in that growing stage, you have to accept that that's just part and parcel of it. But you get to a point where you're like, where do I say no? Where do we where do I draw the line and say, actually, I wanted to build this life to be able to do the things I want to do. And now I'm not doing them because I'm so focused on chasing the money and or chasing the business or whatever it is, you know. And actually, that is where you have to sit down and go, actually, what's important to me? And then you make your next decisions based on that. And I think, like, at the time, you know, I didn't want to move out and didn't want to rent with my boyfriend. We decided to try and stay at home with parents because we thought that was the right thing to do, and then it didn't work out. And actually was like, actually, no, we'll rent. And we really, really begrudged renting at the time because I thought, I don't want to give money to someone that I don't know. But actually it was like, you pay the price in rent, but like, it's the cost of mental health, like living on your own, not living with your parents. I think it's a balance. And I think actually what I've seen as well is over the past 10 years, sharing rooms wasn't as popular 10 years ago. It is now. It's because sharing rooms is like the cost of what rent used to be 8 years
what,
ago.
What, is in a house where there's lots of different people renting?
Yeah, so like rooms, like so different, like HMOs perhaps, different rooms, like large bedrooms with like an ensuite. You see a lot more of those being rented out. You see a lot more, it's a shame. We don't work with that many sellers or many buyers that work on this basis. You get a lot of developers that buy big houses and split them up into rooms and just have them as HMOs because it's an income. And there is a need for that. Also, it's a bit of a shame because it's like years ago, what was £1,000 would have been like a one bed flat.
Yeah.
Whereas now that's like £1,500, £1,600 and upwards. And then those rooms are now the £1,000. That's how crazy it's gone. It is a shame.
Yeah. It's also interesting because it's almost like, it makes me think it's cyclical to a degree, because I mean, my grandparents live in Islington and my granddad, he moved into that house when he was six.
Wow.
And when he moved in, I think they were in the basement, and basically over like 80, 90 years, he died a couple of years ago at 95. They slowly like bought every part of the house.
Yeah, lovely.
So
okay.
He used to be like, oh yeah, there was like a drunk who lived at the back and he was a nightmare. And like my dad went and lived there when my grandparents moved away for the military. And yeah, when my dad lived there after university, there was like four different like random people living in the house.
Wow.
So it's almost like, I think on some scale, we've seen home ownership through like the boom of our parents, like that kind of age where there's actually one point in the list of ages where people buy houses. It kind of consecutively, you get older, and then there was one period where it drops loads. And I think it was like the kind of economic boom in the 90s. And that's kind of what we saw, is like suddenly you're growing up in big houses and stuff. And, you know, their parents didn't do that.
No.
So it's like the ambition is really difficult to benchmark, I think, for an ordinary person now. It's like, well, where should I be? On one side, I see TikTokers buying million-pound houses, as you said, like the young kind of entrepreneurial people, and they're killing it, and that's amazing. And then on the other side, you just see like the rising cost where everyone seems to be renting indefinitely.
Yeah. Something that I've seen a few people do, and I think it's really nice, is I've seen friends buy together. That's lovely. Mm. And I don't think that was perhaps normal when our parents were younger. That wasn't such a thing. You know, you would have been able to afford to just go out and buy with your partner. Like my mum and dad, you know, my dad went home and had an argument with his parents, left and went put £5,000 deposit down on a bungalow.
Wow.
That was £50,000, you know, back in the 90s or the 80s, whenever it was. And then my mum talks literally just the other day. She was telling me about how proud she was of me, but at the same time, she was sending me a copy of her mortgage statement from when my brother and I were babies in the 90s. And it was like, was it penalty, like overdrawn, like they couldn't pay their mortgage, or they were late on paying their mortgage because they were concentrating on feeding us. So she was like, when it was more important for us to look after you, obviously, as children, than it was for us to pay the mortgage. But like we struggled. And they talk about that recession was bad in the 90s when people were giving their keys back and the interest rates were like 17% or something ridiculous. So I think it's hard because you look back and, like, for example, we've listed a house that's like, what, in the millions, and that this lady had inherited it from her parents, and her parents had inherited it from their parents, and the house was bought in 1924 for £550.
Wow.
But back then you look and you're like, they would say that was a lot of money. That was a lot of money back then. And so it's like really hard because we look back and we think, and I agree, like it's really, I think it's exceptionally hard now to get on the ladder more than it ever has been. But then if you talk to your parents about it, they're like, no, it was hard when we were younger. So I feel like they don't always relate. I meet some people that are really, really well to do, you know, own millions of pounds worth of property, £2-3 million homes. And they will openly say, no, it's really hard for you young people to get on the ladder. We're going to help our children. Mm. And that's the reality. Most people, it's really sad. They have to wait for their parents to pass away before they can even afford to buy a house, or they have to wait to be given some inheritance money. And that's a real big shame. That's but something as well we see is like financial advisor that I work closely with, he talks about inheritance being given with a warm hand. So if you can give your children some money or your grandchildren some money, like you can do things like equity release. It's not the best thing. I'm not a financial advisor, but some people do that. Mm. And that means you can free up the cash and see the people around you enjoy the money before you pass away. So that's something that some people do. I mean, not everyone's in that position, but yeah, that's the reality. I think there's a big percentage of people that get some sort of gifted deposit from their parents to get on the ladder, or they inherit some money and that's the only time that they can afford to buy somewhere.
Mm. There's also, it's just kind of interesting, the UK. I mean, yeah, my husband, Chris, is German, as you know, and our mindsets around like renting versus buying when we first met are just like diametrically opposite, in that he was very much kind of, well, I grew up hearing like when you rent, you're paying someone else's mortgage. That's like my parents' favourite expression. Mm. It's like, all you're doing is paying somebody else's mortgage. And that's how I grew up. I was like, yeah, well, I'm paying someone else's mortgage, which it's true, but it completely disregards like you are paying for a thing. As you said, like whether you're paying for cakes or getting your nails done, you still get something in return. Like, I understand that it's obviously everyone has to have housing. It's like you have to have it to survive, but you get something in return. And Chris really like instilled that in me, because in Germany, I think it's something like 60% of people rent. Mm. It's completely normal. And like adults with children, like whole families, they rent, and it's not like unusual because they have such good renting laws there.
Yeah.
That it's like you move in and you can be there for like 20 years easily. It just doesn't feel like that exists in the UK. So we're like desperate to buy.
I think what makes it hard is, and this is what there is again, like a vicious cycle here, because the government, they heavily tax landlords, and it's very difficult to be a landlord, and it's expensive now to be a landlord. Mm. And there are so many laws that protect tenants, rightly so, but almost put landlords off investing. And when you think, most landlords, say for instance, you and Chris owned your property and you decided to go overseas for his work or for your work, and you thought, actually, we don't necessarily want to sell the property because we need a UK base, so we'll keep it and we'll rent it out. Most people don't, they break even now because the mortgages are so high.
Right.
So actually, because then your rental income is actually treated as income, so you get taxed on it. So if you were working for a UK company overseas and you were receiving a UK like pay, that would be taxable income. So you get taxed like 50% on that. Mm. And then actually by the time you've been paid your rental income and then you've paid the mortgage, most people are in a loss. So then what you've got is you've got people selling their rental properties, so they're exiting the market, they're no longer going to be landlords, right, which leaves less rental property available, which means rental prices go up, and it makes it really harder for people to get even a rental property and get on the ladder. Most people think that, oh, well, if there's less landlords, then property is more affordable to buy. The reality is that actually no, because people still need to save up a huge chunk of money for a deposit. Interest rates are really high. I mean, example, you know, £1,600 a month for rent up to just shy of £3,000 a month for a mortgage. Mm. And that's the reality. And I think someone said to me years ago, and it makes sense. You can rent from a private landlord or you can rent from the bank. I'm renting from my bank. I don't own my house until I pay my mortgage off. And that's the reality. And my mortgage, so our house is £550,000. If we keep our mortgage the exact same time, the exact same throughout the whole term, we will owe £1.1 million for our house in interest and the price for the property.
Yeah.
So when you think about, we rented for 5 years and we calculated the amount of rent that we'd paid out, and I think we worked it out to be maybe 40 grand, which was like, oh, we could have had that 40 grand for a deposit. It's like, actually, our first year of mortgage is all interest. That's £36,000 in interest. So you have to look at it and say, actually, yes, we're renting, but we have to be somewhere. And also, like you say, in lots of countries, it's normal. The thing I think with the UK culture is people almost, there's a lot of landlord shaming, and they put it in the news a lot about landlords have done this. There are a lot of good landlords out there, very genuine people that can't now get a pension because pensions are, they just don't exist anymore. They're not what they were. You know, years ago, you'd meet people that would retire on full wage and they could live on that for the rest of their life. And that was what their corporation would pay. Now we've got corporation, now that there's a, like, that's not a thing anymore. Corporations just pocket more money.
Yeah.
They keep more money. And then these people that have worked hard their whole life go, well, I need something. So maybe I'll get a little rental property and that'll be my little nest egg and my pension. And then all of a sudden you've got this person that's made an investment in a property. They're a landlord. They're breaking even perhaps. And they're renting their property out. They're good people. Mm. And people like, well, the younger generation mostly, and understandably so, because what they're being fed from the media is like, well, why do you need to be a landlord? Why do you need two homes? It's like, because they can't afford a pension. Like, yeah, it goes, it's like a really vicious circle. But then at the same time, you're like, what? This is that moral dilemma I spoke about earlier. I didn't really touch on it properly, but like with the TikTok comments, people would be like, you know, you're an estate agent. You're contributing towards people not being able to afford housing. Like, you getting these really great prices for your clients is pushing the prices up, and we can't afford to buy in the areas we live in. I'm like, it's a real hard one. I had to step back and think, what am I doing here? And actually put my purpose first and think, I'm helping people. People are always going to have to move home. They're always going to need someone to sell their property. They're going to need someone by their side. That's my purpose. I can't get embroiled and wrapped up in the whole, you know, the housing estate, housing market.
Well,
you
can't fix it.
I can't fix it. I think, and that was a really hard thing for me to try and overcome in my head, because I thought, what can I do here? How can I help? And there's not much I can do. And that's the really hard part about it. I think in life, you kind of look and you're like, actually, we all contribute some sort of problem to the world. You know, smartphones, how their batteries are mined from cobalt. Cobalt is a massive issue with slave labor. And there's a bigger problem in the whole world. You can't entirely be this person that doesn't cause any issue anywhere. You know, you drive a car, you're contributing towards pollution. Everything's a problem.
Yeah.
And you're sort of like, oh, what do I do? How do I help? And you kind of just go, I'll do the best I can here. People need me, I'll do that. But the pricing and everything is just insane, because, you know, why do people need two homes? They need two homes because they, like, maybe they need their pension. Why do they need two homes? Because I can't afford to buy a home. It's like, it's really tough. Mm. Yeah. And I feel like that doesn't help anyone. Not me saying, oh, it's tough. No, I'm like, I think it's honest to be saying, no, it is tough. And it's really hard for me to say. It's a very big moral dilemma working in this industry, because you do feel like, well, yeah, what do you do?
Yeah. And sometimes it's just a case of, like, you know, understanding of, I think what pissed people off was all the, when there was that trend of being like, millennials can't buy houses because they're buying avocado toast and lattes.
Yeah.
I think that was the thing. And it's like, no, Dave, we're not doing that. It's because it used to cost, I think it was something like 5 times the average income to buy a home.
Yeah.
And now it's like 25, or
yeah,
those aren't exact stats, don't quote me on it. But it's like, yes, it was a lot of money back then, but in terms of relativity, it is more. And
it's,
that's
more
just
now.
That's,
yeah,
how it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, everything like this is, there's benefits of renting, there's benefits of owning a home. And even with your story, you know, there's benefits in you going out and deciding to start your own thing versus if you'd stayed in corporate. Like, everything in life, there's never a perfect door that opens to walk through, is there?
No, there's not. And I think you at every point, even when you feel like you're making the right decision, you're almost sacrificing something else. Like, I can't remember her name, the lady who had on that was talking about not wanting children.
Katie,
yeah. I really would like children. I'm like, but bitch, where are they going to fit in my schedule? Where am I going to have time for a child? I need a nanny. Can I afford a nanny? No. So I'm going to have to go back to work. And I just feel like that's a thing now as well, because childcare is so expensive. So if you want to become, if you're like a high flying corporate woman and you want to do well, you have to earn well enough to not only provide for your family, but you need to go to work. So you also need to provide for nursery. So I feel like, even when you're chasing that dream and like the people we champion, the way they go up in the world and they buy their bigger home and they spend more money, it's like there's a sacrifice there. You know, these people send their children to nursery. They can't look after, like, years ago, like, our parents would have been like, my mum was stayed at home for years and years and years, and she only went back to work when she really needed to. And that was in like the 2000s or something. And that was what we were used to. We were used to my mum being at home, and I want to be there for my kids, but I'm like, also, I love my job.
Yeah.
So and that is the balance. I think that's like, you feel like you're making a sacrifice at every point. You're like, if I don't buy my house, what am I doing instead? And if I don't buy avocado on toast, where's that money going? Am I saving it? No. So you just, it's like, and I feel like that's a really hard part. Like, this being called the weird years is so good, because you go through, I don't know about you, but like, you feel like you have to have your life together in your 20s and your mid 20s and even your late, it keeps going on. And sometimes, like, just to clarify, I turned up today and I said to you before, I left my house without my makeup bag. This morning I burnt porridge and I left the house and my hair smelt like my burnt porridge. Like, you can't have your life together everywhere in every area of your life.
Yeah.
If anyone is doing that, I'd love to hear from them because that's really aspirational. But I feel like there's always something that is really hard to get right. Housing is a massive one. And I think if you're renting with your friends and you're having a good time or you're renting with your boyfriend and you're both doing really well and you're living a nice life and you're happy, that's
like, take the pressure off.
Yeah, like just I think all you have to do is go, do you know what, actually I'm really enjoying what I do for work. You know, we've got a home that we love. I get to go home and spend time with my partner. I can turn my phone off at 6, knowing actually Tanya's having to work till 11 o'clock. She might have the dream job, but actually, you know, she's got to work later. And some people, like, they enjoy doing that, and that's lovely. I think it's finding joy and purpose and sitting down and having an honest conversation with yourself and saying, okay, what do I really, really want, and pursue that, if that makes sense. Like, I've got friends that literally just want to be a mum, and I love that. And they're like, no, I don't really want to go back to work. Good. Like, if you can do that, do that. You know, you don't have to go and pursue like a big massive house. You don't have to. I've got friends that rent and have children, and they just want to have their family. They don't really want to buy a house. Not bothered.
Yeah.
I think just it's having that honest conversation in your head and going, actually, what do I want to do? What means the most to me? What can I do? And not put yourself under more unnecessary pressure beyond what you can do. But also, it's like we were talking about off air again, that if you do want to do something, be so delusional that you believe you can do it.
Yeah.
So go for it. Like, don't like settle for less in every area. Like, if you're like, you know what, I'm going to be the most awesome mum and I'm going to stay at home, great, do that. And I'm sure you'll be the best mum ever. Or if you want to go and pursue your career and you want to make it work, you'll make it, like, yeah, I'm rambling now, sorry.
No, that's literally like what the whole podcast, like what I've wanted to share with people, is that like there is no one path, and it is literally, as you said, it's about having that conversation with yourself and then having the balls to go after it and knowing whatever you choose there will be sacrifice.
Yeah.
But what's like the biggest, you know, because you've had this massive boom and as you said, you know, your friends are starting to have kids and you know you're working till 11 o'clock at night, what's been like your big sacrifice that you're like, is there something that's niggling and you're like, oh, things would be different?
I do think it's children. I think like my friends, like I constantly think my mum was 28 when she had me. She was 29. She was 29 when she had me. My dad was 30. I'm now 32. I'm 2 years behind them in having kids. But then equally, my dad's run his own business for 30 years and my business this year will probably do more than my dad did in any of his best years ever. So I feel like I've sacrificed starting a family, and people put this, they don't put you under pressure. They don't say now, oh, you're going to have kids. They say things like if it's like a close friend, it's fine. It's a consideration and it's welcomed, but you also like you hear it in your head and you're like, oh shit. It's like, oh, have you thought about having your eggs frozen? Or like, you can always go for a fertility test. And you're like, hang on a minute. And I saw a reel the other day and it just struck panic into me. It's like, I think it's women that try to get pregnant after age 30 have a 19% chance of conceiving naturally. And I was like, who told you to share this stat? Who told you? That's not fair. I don't want to see this on my feed. And I was like, not interested. And I thought that like struck fear into me. I thought, I'm sacrificing my years, putting in like all this energy into my business, and what if I can't have a baby? And I felt like that's what I want. That's what I'm doing this for. I want to have a nice life with my boyfriend. And I'm like, what if I can't? And that is like the biggest thing in my head. And then I'm like, wait, what am I doing this for? A therapist taught me once, you know, sometimes your worries and your thoughts will just spiral out of control and you'll end up in a place where you don't even know where you are. Come back to reality, like touch something, smell, what can you smell? What can you see? Yeah. Bring yourself back down to ground. And then I just like, you know what? I just take each day at a time. I'm going to go to Lydia's podcast today. I'm going to have a nice chat. And then afterwards, I'm going to go and have some lunch. And then it's going to be okay. I just take every moment as it is.
Yeah.
And not try to think too much about what my mum did when she was in her 20s. And like,
different world.
It's just, yeah. And I think the harsh reality is we do constantly look back. And that makes it even harder because it's like, oh, my mum and dad owned a place when they were 28, 29. And I don't own until my early 30s. And it's like, you just do the best you can. Just do the best you can, and and know that that's the best that you can do.
Yeah. There's this Sylvia Plath quote, which I think I've probably quoted on here before, but this that I loved, and she talks about a fig tree. I can't remember the exact framing, but it's essentially that she's sat underneath a fig tree and there's all these different figs and she can't decide which one to choose. And that she waits so long that all of the figs shrivel and die and fall to the ground. And it's her like analogy of, as a woman, like trying to decide which path you go down.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that was really powerful because I was like, well, yeah, I'm sure some of your friends who have kids sit at home and see your TikToks and think, God, I wish I was that passionate about something. Mm. And I wish I had something that I wake up in the morning and I'm like, that's my business. And that's, you know, you said your business is your baby.
Yeah.
Like, that's also completely valid. Like, no one's got everything. No one's got it all.
No. And I think that this thing about like years ago, before I set this business up, my mum said to me about someone said, like, so my boyfriend is from far away, not as far as Germany, but like my boyfriend was from up north and we used to commute to see each other. And so when we used to spend time together, it was quite precious. So we used to do a lot. So we would always be doing something. Mm. And that was the norm for us because we would try and make as much as we could with the time we had together. And then I just didn't consider. I used to just share stuff on socials. And then my mum said, oh, so-and-so saw the other day. They said, you're always doing amazing stuff. And I thought, and I was having a really bad day at that time. I think it's probably work-related. And I remember thinking, it's quite sad actually, because everything, it's like everyone knows that socials are like a snapshot of everything that's amazing that's happening in life. Mm. And I really welcome the content that's genuine. It's like, actually, no, I'm struggling with this, or this is happening,
yeah,
or this is not right, because actually it brings like a sense of reality to everything. But you can't have everything. That like my really good friends got pregnant last year, and I was, work was going okay, it was going good, but I was like, I was going through that stage where I want a baby, and I can't just have a baby because I don't own my house, and I didn't want to have a baby in a rental and then us have to move and it'd be too stressful. So it's like this constant, like, when do we have a baby? It's like, my boyfriend and I talk about it a lot, and we're like, oh, maybe we'll do it then. And then I feel like, why can't we just have a baby? It's really sad that we've got to plan everything around this frigging unborn baby. And when my friend announced that she was pregnant last year, I was so upset. I went and like aggressively pruned. I was really happy for her, but also I was struggling inside because of what I feel like I was missing out on.
Yeah.
And I was like aggressively pruning all the trees in my garden. And then my boyfriend came out and was like, are you okay? I was like, no, I'm not. And then I was like, you're the problem. And we had like this little mini argument about this freaking baby that isn't even here.
Yeah.
And then I remember speaking to her about it, and I wanted to approach it at a delicate time because she just announced it and it was really special for her, and I was really upset, but it was a me problem, not her problem. I was so happy for her, and I remember eventually talking to her about it, and she was like, yeah, but you've got your business, and you know, at some point you probably won't have to go back to work, you'll have to be able to have some time off and stuff. And it put into perspective for me, like, people probably look at me and think Tanya's doing so well, but equally, I, behind the scenes, it's a me problem again. I'm very conscious of that, but like, I have my own, like, oh, I would love to do that. Oh, like, I'd love to go away for 2 weeks. I probably could go away for 2 weeks, but I can't in my head because I'm so focused on the business.
Yeah.
And people think that, people look at that, and that, but I think everyone has that no matter where you are in life.
Mm.
I've seen people that own million-pound homes and they, you know, millions of pounds worth of property, and that like everyone else is like, oh, you know, they're doing great. And then you think they're just really busy all the time. They don't get to go home that much. And then like people don't see that side of things.
Yeah. I feel like it's a sad thing, or like a truth that it's always, you know, short-term pain for long-term gain in a business. That's often the reality. But it's just unfortunate that it tends to happen for women over the years
where you're
if you want to have kids. Yeah.
Your fertile years, basically. Yeah, yeah.
That's the rough part.
Yeah, it is. And I think you just have to, I mean, I think what keeps me going and makes me, like, brings me a lot of peace and keeps my mind at ease is a lot of the people that I move that are doing amazing things and they own millions of pounds worth of property, they're women that are like absolute powerhouses. You know, they've had children in their late 30s. And I'm like, I said it to one of my clients, but I'm like, that is really aspirational. Like, to see a woman doing so well, managing her life, buying the house she loves, going up in the world, you know, doing amazing in law or finance or whatever it is, and having kids. Like, you, I don't know if they know, but I'm like, you're a superwoman. Like, lady works with me, Laura, she's got three kids, and she comes to work and she just does all this amazing stuff. And I'm like, then she goes home and she's a mum. And I'm like, you are amazing at what you do. Like, and I don't know where I was going with that. Sorry, I'm waffling again.
No, some people are, they are killing it as well. So we always ask questions out to the listeners. And with this, I talked about kind of how people are feeling around housing, what their relationship has been with it so far. And we had one, a female, 33, anonymous, write in. And she said, it was my absolute dream to buy a home and I'm so proud that I did it. But it is incredibly difficult if you're renting. We were homeless when I was little and my mum drilled into me that it's really important to have your own stuff and stand on your own 2 feet. I don't rely on a man because he can take it away or take half of it. We all know what we see and learn from a young age goes into our subconscious. So owning a home became one of my life goals. I thought that was such a nice share.
Really nice. You know, when I first started out in the industry, I remember being with a guy called Gavin and he was like, I've got a spare flat, you know, and I remember thinking I should, like, that's how it should be. You should, like, my mum and dad have sort of raised me to be a bit like that. Like, they'll help me out, but they won't give anything to me for nothing sort of thing. And I feel like it's that is a really good way to look at it. Like, and I often find that my dad was from like nothing, you know, his mum and dad didn't own a property. They had a council house and my dad's done really well. And I've been privileged enough to look up to him and I've had an upbringing where he sacrificed a lot to make sure that we didn't go without. I think it's a powerful thing. Like, credit to that lady.
Yeah. And also it's just, you know, housing and it can become really transactional, but it is also an incredibly emotional feeling around security often.
Yeah. And that, again, it goes back to like, not just me, but the other people that feel like, oh, I can't have a baby because I'm renting. Or I can't feel like I start a family because it's too small. We can't have a baby in a 2-bed flat. It is a massive, like, it builds massive pillars for security for you to be able to feel like you can do the next thing in your life.
Mm.
And it's rewarding for us to be there, but also it's really sad that that is how the reality, like, that's how it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Another lady wrote in, a female, 37, who said that she feels 1,000% lucky to own a home and it's providing passive rental income. So she now lives with her partner, but she rents out the flat that she bought. The fact is, if I lost my job, I could still pay the mortgage and that's crucial. Plus the location and the rental area just means it will always be stable income. And I think to your point earlier, like, for some people, whether it's because they don't have a mortgage anymore or because they have, you know, unstable work, if you're a freelancer, like, sometimes you need rental income to survive.
Yeah, definitely. And also that if she's moved in with her partner, you know, I'm sure everything will be fine.
Mm.
But like, if everything doesn't work out, she can go back to, she can sadly serve her tenant's notice and move back into her home.
Yeah.
And that idea of security that you mentioned is a massive thing.
Mm.
She can then go back to the home that she has. She's not going to be, no, she can't, sorry, what am I trying to say? She's not going to have to go back and move back in with her parents. What if she doesn't have parents? You know, you just never know what someone's going to go through, what someone's going through. And that's a massive thing. I think it offers that extra blanket of security, especially in a relationship that's like new and fresh.
Yeah.
And jobs that are new and fresh as well. They're not where you were originally.
Yeah. And the last one I'm going to read is someone wrote in, she's also female, 31. She said, for me, buying feels very out of reach right now, but I'm also not bothered. I'm really happy with the flexibility that renting gives me.
I think flexibility is a massive thing because we had that when we were renting the first place that we've moved twice and our landlord served us notice because she wanted to sell. And at the time we were like, what are we going to do? And then renting, the biggest thing in my head when I decided to set up a company, this company, was if I can't pay my mortgage, that's a big deal. But if I can't pay my rent, I can call my landlord or I can make sure I can pay it back. You can, you know, especially a corporate landlord, like Wells was a big farm, you can call them and have a conversation with them and speak to them about your problem. You can't call the bank. And, well, you can, but it's not the same.
Mm.
And you can always serve, if it's that bad, you can always serve notice and say, I need to move back with my parents. You can't serve notice on your mortgage.
Yeah.
It's a much bigger responsibility. So actually she's so right. That outlook and that mindset is so right to have about renting. It does offer complete flexibility, and it's not forever. If you don't want it to be forever, it's not forever. But if it is forever, you're probably still paying less than the total amount of a mortgage.
Yeah, and that's the difference, right? Is that before, I think that's where my parents always came from, is like the mortgage would be less than renting, and that's not the case anymore. So we have to kind of recontextualize it and come at it from a different mindset.
Yeah, and also some people, like, I saw something just to finish up on someone. I saw something about, it was in America, so it doesn't necessarily apply in the UK, but they were talking about how expensive owning a house is, and actually if renting is less, you can put more into your investment. So actually,
yeah, for sure.
What if that makes sense and it makes financial sense for you, then why not? And I think it's, again, like you going back to what you said earlier, everyone is so different. Everyone is on a different path. Mm. I think the hardest thing to make sure you don't, like, it's hard, but you don't do it, is to compare, like looking at other people and going, oh, so-and-so is that age and they've got kids. So-and-so is that age and I, you know, they've got a house and I haven't. It's really hard because actually what you've got, someone is probably on the outside looking at what you've got and think, really wish what they had.
100%. And even sometimes the younger you is looking at it and being like, God, if I knew I'd be in a cool rented flat in East London, like going to an ice bath at lunchtime, people, they'd be like, wow.
Yeah, I love that one. I sometimes think about little Tanya and I'm like walking her out of the playground and being like, did we do this? Yeah, we did that. And yeah, we're doing this. And I think back to me 5 years ago, me 5 years ago, I'd be like, you're like, what? Are you joking? So yeah, that I think puts into perspective. Things like gratitude journals are a really good thing as well. Like,
I love that stuff. I love it. Me too. Okay, this is our final part that we like to finish up on. So yes or mess is the segment. I'm going to ask you 5 rapid fire questions.
Okay.
And you answer with yes if you're into it and mess if you're like, no, that's not what it's about. So number one, saving every penny for a house deposit.
Mess.
Fair. Buying a property with a friend.
Yes.
Tiny homes.
Yes.
Seeing home ownership as a crucial milestone.
Mess.
And investing in your... You can add.
Yes, and mess. It is a crucial milestone, but don't like hedge everything and your whole life on it.
Yeah. I liked what you said earlier when you were like, buying a property isn't everything.
Yeah. It's not everything. It's not everything.
Investing in your goals before investing in a house.
Yes, if that's right for you. Yes, yes. Like if you feel so passionately about those goals and you're like, I want to do this, yes, 100%. Obviously,
that's what you've done.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, it's working out for you. And yeah, do you want to tell people your Instagram so they can find you?
Oh, it's tanyabaker.co.uk.
And it's fun. And you have to check it out. Yeah. So many reels.
Hopefully my voice will send you to sleep. You can watch the videos of the houses.
You need to do like a nice ASMR actually, because you have a very relaxing voice.
Someone said this, so I did an ASMR and then people were outraged. They were like, this is horrible, don't ever do this again. So I thought, okay, I'll take that back to the drawing board. No more ASMR. So now it's just like nice and, oh, this is what you get for £500 million.
Yeah, the internet will humble you.
Very much so. TikTok section, like the TikTok comment section is humbling.
No, terrible. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's been really helpful.
Yeah, thank you.